Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White. Before I start, I wanted to thank Don from the Don and Win Show for his kind comments about my book. And for those who are interested, it's called Tales of the Zany Mystic, and it is available at Amazon.com. Tonight's going to be a real Fireside Chat because the power grid went down, and I've been without power until about 10 minutes ago, and so I built a fire in the fireplace. And so we have a real Fireside Chat tonight. And my guest is Jack Hawes. Jack is a gifted artist, mystic, and author. His book, entitled Om Baby, is an autobiographical journey detailing the path of a seeker and finder of truth. In his book, The Way of Wonder, he shares his groundbreaking exploration of the mystery of existence. He's an amazing artist, and you can take a look at some of his artwork at www.jackhaas.net, and I highly recommend that you do that right away because it's really worth seeing. So let's welcome this multidimensional and multifaceted person to the show now. Hi, Jack. How are you?
Yeah, thanks, Lance. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Maybe we should just kind of go back to the beginnings of your spiritual quest or your journey. I tend to see that as something that we chose before we incarnate. And, of course, there's no proof that we are incarnated souls. But let's start with the beginning of your journey and what started your quest for, self-realization or higher consciousness.
Sure. Well, first of all, I do agree with you that I believe also that we have many incarnations prior to this one, and those either prepare us for this one or accomplish other things prior to this one that we can then accomplish. And it's a big gray area in which it's very tough to discern how linear that process is, but the bottom line is, yeah, I agree with you that we've been here before. In this life, it's hard to say exactly when I began to sort of get the urge for the spiritual life, so to speak.
Yeah.
I would say in my early 20s, I was working at a job that I didn't like at all. I felt slightly bound into an existence that wasn't providing me any sustenance, and just by the off chance, a roommate of mine purchased a book on Zen Buddhism, and that was really the entrance into a lot of things. It just opened my eyes to see that what I had been shown up until my early 20s was only just a fragment of a veneer over a greater reality. And so I started, doing some meditation, and then moved out west soon after that, which was really a milestone, a cornerstone, actually, in everything that proceeded after that, because it opened up all different sorts of channels for both my life in the world and also spiritual life.
Now, when you say the West, what is that? Are you talking about the West Coast of the United States, or the West being America?
West Coast of Canada, actually.
Oh, okay. I was wrong on both counts.
Well, I was born in the States, but moved up with my family to Canada when I was young. Grew up mostly in Ontario, and then in my early 20s moved to British Columbia. I have spent time in Alaska and Hawaii and, some of the other Western states, but mostly British Columbia. That's been my haunting ground for better part of the last 18 years.
So then you were in your 20s, and you had moved to the west coast of Canada, and what experiences did you have there that kept you going in that direction? I know for myself, when I was about 20, I started exploring higher consciousness through mind-altering substances, but it was very haphazard, and we won't get into that here tonight, but what was it for you that unlocked the future path?
I would have to say it was more divine intervention than anything.
Yeah.
Even though I had For many years, I was just an omnivorous reader of all sorts of sacred texts and religious books, anything I could get my hand on. They were certainly planting seeds, and I was also experimenting with different mind-altering substances, not to a great extent. It was never a huge aspect of my journey.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, to me, it was, you know, there are certain elements, greater spirits in this universe, in the sublime realm, that for one reason or another, and I'm not sure what those reasons are, they pick you out of the crowd and decide this is going to, you know, we're going to force you to become something that you're not right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't really foresee where it was my intent to make anything happen, but I do remember a couple seminal events which lead me to believe, there was certain guiding hands that looked over me and, without me knowing anything about it, started pushing me in a direction that, when I became a little more conscious of, I was able to sort of pick up the ball and help it move forward, as opposed to, you know, stumbling over it and being pushed forward.
Mm-hmm.
One of those was a very simple event. A couple years after I was in British Columbia, I had a dream. And in the dream, I felt as if I was being crushed by an incredible weight, an incredible oppression on my being. And in the dream, I was trying to get away, trying to get out. I couldn't, of course. And I woke up, and in the split second of very lucid consciousness in between the dream state and waking, I knew it was God.
Huh.
And it, not that that has... that hasn't been a guiding event, but it was something that made me realize, holy smokes, something huge here going on, and I am, you know, I can take it, I could be a victim and say, holy, you know, I'm being oppressed by this weight, or I could realize it's pushing me down, pushing me in a direction because I'm off the trail and it's helping me get back on.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, that was kind of the beginning of my understanding that there were greater forces helping me move along, and it wasn't just under my own volition, so to speak.
Well, you know, a lot of people that I've had on the show, and I tend to believe this myself, is that we have a great deal of help from what we consider to be the other side. It's invisible to us now, but that we all have guides and angels, if you want to call them that. Different people have different names for these things, but that we all have a great deal of assistance. Especially at this time, to continue on a path of evolution towards spirit, although it certainly doesn't look that way in the world, does it?
Yeah, it's an incredible ambiguity. I absolutely agree with you, because in the sublime realm there is all sorts of assistance and you know, powers looking out, even, you know, creating events that will help an individual grow, and yeah, when you look at the world in a linear fashion and in a materialistic fashion, it looks as chaotic as it's ever been.
Yeah.
So I can't reconcile that, to tell you the truth. I do believe everything has a reason, but I don't think that we're necessarily capable of understanding what that reason is.
Yeah. It's just amazing how superficial things have become. And, you know, you almost have to work at weeding through on the Internet or anywhere, just weeding through the assault, the numerous assaults on your consciousness or your psyche that all want to put their hooks in you and take you in a certain direction. And I think television is probably one of the worst of those today, and so many people are addicted to it. So you eventually ended up traveling over to seek a teacher in India, and in other countries you had some experiences with teachers. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, first a little correction is that I never went over there seeking a teacher.
Okay.
I do feel I was guided there, and I just, of course, because I was being guided, I ended up in the places where those beings were, and the ones who taught me were not incarnate beings. I had, before leaving for India on that trip, I had a pretty solid dream that kind of mapped out the path that, you know, on a physical map of India, I could actually see it in the dream, the path I would take, and I didn't know, you know, what I would encounter during that journey, but it was incredibly profound. I'm just recalling off the tip of my head, I mean, there was a number of events that were really profound, but the four that kind of were the pillars of that journey were, one was Dharamsala, and the incredibly oceanic consciousness that pervades that whole area where the Tibetan Buddhists are now living in exile. The Dalai Lama has his home and monastery. And if you can become still enough and tap into it, there's an amazing ocean of consciousness there, which, you know, really awoke me to that all-pervasiveness in a way.
Do you think it's possible for us to tap into that from where we're at non-locally? It's not as easy, is it?
It's not as easy.
No.
Sometimes place does matter.
Yeah.
I have felt it elsewhere for sure, and I can generally place myself in that state now. I don't know if it's because I have experienced it in the past, but I think you can, sure, and I think somebody who's really open can, you know, can access things anywhere in the universe, really.
Yeah.
For myself, it's been a long process of opening me up and developing a consciousness which can receive what's out there to receive. So in a lot of ways, I think I had to travel a lot because I needed to be where the epicenter of the experience was, because I wasn't capable at that time of receiving it from a distance.
And then that shifts and changes, doesn't it? I mean, sometimes it will, an epicenter today will not necessarily be a place where you can get the most guidance or inspiration in the months to come. And sometimes it seems that shifts for us, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, it could shift in a geographical sense, but I think for myself it shifts due to my own evolution, meaning, it's kind of like stepping stones. You're on one stepping stone, and that was important for you to get to where you are.
Right.
But after that, you need to go to the next stepping stone.
And often, if we don't move there fast enough, we get knocked off and fall into the water.
Yeah, I think definitely the spirit wants to keep us moving.
Yeah. Although I have had long periods of stagnation, I must admit. And then in a moment of clarity, when I've had a moment of awakening, realize that 7 years have gone by and I've been asleep, and yet all of those moments were necessary to reach that one moment.
Yeah.
So sometimes it seems pretty paradoxical.
It does. I mean, just hearing you talk about that, it could be somewhat like, how a seed may remain dormant because the time isn't right. And you know, there's a consciousness to that species, which goes, you know, if we start to germinate now, it's not going to work.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. It seems like a lot of people are awakening, not as many as I had thought there would be, but a lot of people are awakening, and they're having spontaneous kundalini experiences, and the indigo kids that are being born onto the planet, and it seems that there's a big increase in the ability to awaken for some, as far as the timing goes.
Yeah, I would definitely agree from my position, but having not lived in other eras, consciously, I mean, I think of Paris in the 20s and the hippie era. I'm not sure if they would have said the exact same thing that we're saying now.
Yeah.
Possible not, but I agree with you. There does seem to be an abundance of potential which is beginning to bear fruit.
You've studied some of the Hindu teachings, too. Are we at a particular period in terms of the Hindu philosophy as far as our evolutionary purpose goes?
Well, yeah, that would come. My knowledge of it comes more from reading and other people's expression of it than my own personal experience. Of course, there's the whole sort of conventional recognition that we are at the end of Kali Yuga.
Yeah.
But I believe the next one is called Satya Yuga. I'm not sure. In which, of course, there will be a transition of power and certain negative energies will be purged, and there will be a greater levity, so to speak. And yeah, I can see that there's no reason that's not happening. I haven't had a personal experience that says Kali Yuga is over, or even that Kali Yuga exists. Like that's more of a cosmic event that hasn't really touched me personally. Although if it's going on, of course, I'm experiencing it. But I haven't had a recognition that yeah, that is the case. I have had close interaction with some of the Hindu deities, which I absolutely confirm exist, and specifically Durga and Shiva.
Okay,
their energy is fully available. Why it comes to some more directly and more obviously than others, that I'm not sure of. But I believe for certainly that the Hindu pantheon is a reality.
Huh.
All the way through to, Ganesha and Hanuman, the monkey-faced god, and, Narayana, Lakshmi. There's a reason that those personalities have the qualities that the Indian people have given them, because that is the reality of their existence.
Interesting.
If you tap into their being, if they, shall we say, bless you with a visitation, it's become so obvious that they are an actuality, and their actuality is well represented in the characteristics applied to them by the Hindu theology.
Uh-huh. How do you go about doing that?
Well, that's
the million-dollar question.
Yeah, it's a big gray area.
A lot of meditation and intent.
Yeah, being still and being open helps in everything, I think.
Mm.
What experience you get or somebody else gets, in my mind, doesn't necessarily really matter, because everybody's going to have a different experience.
Right.
Everyone's not supposed to have the same experience.
Yeah, so that's right, right.
Somebody being still in the same room as me might be, having some amazing intimacy with Gaia.
Right,
or
right.
With another divine being from another religion altogether.
Now, and speaking of Gaia, you're, of course, referring to our planet Earth, correct? And
yes,
the spirit of Earth?
Yes.
A lot of people that I respect and have had on the show talk about Gaia as being a living entity, and that she is in the process of raising her vibration. And as a result, that, we will need to be going through some kind of shift ourselves. And then, of course, that ties into, can tie into some of the Mayan prophecies and calendars, which are becoming quite popular. The December 21st date of 2012. Are you? Does any of that resonate for you at all?
Well, the Mayan aspect. Again, that's not a personal experience. I've read, a little bit on it, and of course, you can't help osmotically taking some stuff in, just from surfing New Age websites and stuff like that.
Right.
And so, I can't affirm or discount it. I do believe that there is some validity, perhaps 100% validity. And I've had one dream pointing out that 2012 would be an important year. How profound or sublime it will be, I'm not sure. It could be that we just walk through a veil, and we don't even maybe recognize that we walk through the veil,
that
all of a sudden things are changed.
I think
somebody who is versed in the Mayan mythology and or has, you know, very intimate mystical experiences with it is probably listening to this and thinking that, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about, and that's actually the case. I don't have a lot of experience with the Mayan
cosmology.
Energy.
Yeah.
You know, I work a lot in energy and consciousness, and I have not involved myself in that realm yet. Could come, whether it does or doesn't. I mean, it's not really that important to me as long as I maintain my focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But getting to the Gaia aspect, yeah, I really think that Gaia, I use the term raising her vibration as well. I think personally it's more up to us to raise her vibration than it is up to her.
That we're the ones that are actually the transformers of the energy?
Yeah, it's a matter of bringing our spirits right down into the flesh and holding them there.
Uh-huh.
In my mind, in my experience, so that the consciousness and matter mix completely, and then without trying to get away from this paradigm, we raise it up. And that's a huge work, because it means becoming both polarities, means becoming matter and spirit, and it means that things are going to go slower than the spirit wants and maybe faster than matter wants.
Yeah,
I kind of have to really hold an inner balance and know that this is a new event and may have some rocky times.
And, yeah.
But I've had experiences with Gaia, and I think she's wholly conscious and, you know, very aware of her own being. But, you know, everyone needs help, and matter needs help to become something different. But in order for that to occur, spirit has to become something different as well, because when two things unite, it becomes one new event. It's not, neither one is what they used to be.
Like a synergy.
Exactly, yeah.
Some of the material that I've read talks about divinized matter, that etheric matter is, just like you said, that spirit is being anchored or grounded into, or I guess they refer to this as light, being brought through us, and that we're raising matter to the level of light, or you could say it the other way, that light is descending to meet us in the middle, and mixing in kind of some kind of a cosmic stew. But you know what's so strange is that it seems like, as if that's the case, this is a very odd time, because it's a time when it's difficult to be on this planet, and it's becoming increasingly difficult with, you know, just observing what's going on all over the globe, the corruption and the greed and the manipulation and the control and the damage to Gaia. I mean, even if you strip away what mankind is doing, what about all the damage that we're doing to the planet, cutting down the rainforest, and we're just both throwing bones over our shoulders left and right. It seems like something has got to give.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I mean, in a transformation, everything has to shift.
Yeah.
And I suppose this is why we have, apocalyptic visions, because one potential outcome is apocalyptic. The other potential outcome is a very gentle transition.
Like a transformational experience.
Yeah, like suddenly, like putting adding two chemicals together, and suddenly it's a whole new chemical. And, you know, if that happens at the heart level, for example, and all of a sudden everyone experiences love for one another,
yes,
then the whole show it won't crumble. It will just dissipate. They'll all realize, holy smokes, that person across the table from me or across the street or in another house or another country is my brother.
Yes.
That one in another continent is my sister, and there's no way I'm going to spend, you know, money on something that's harming them.
Yes, yes.
And so if it's a heart awakening, the paradigm will shift of its own accord. It's like a reconciliation between brothers, or the return of the prodigal son, or whatever you want to call it. It is nothing at that point will have to change vibrationally, because everyone will recognize that you want to care about the person.
Yes.
In another country or wherever they are.
Yes, it's amazing that, you know, we can connect on a heart level. Even just watching the news, I when I see people from other countries and I can feel their joy or their sadness for whatever reason, there's like a commonality of the heart, and I can tell. I mean, I just feel that those people are basically, they're me. They're my brothers and sisters, and even though we don't speak the same language, there's a connection there that's so profound that it seems that if everybody gets it, there wouldn't be any wars left, and there wouldn't be, you know, there would be a major transformation, like you just said. So
yeah.
Let's hope that there will be a heart awakening. Part of this, you write about this in your books too, has to do with the balance between the feminine and the masculine energy, and the possibility that spirit is androgynous. But that the feminine and masculine have to meet and balance or merge. And it seems like we're in a masculine-dominated society, but the feminine this is going to be a time of the feminine being on the upswing, isn't it? According to the energy cycles that we're in?
Well, yeah, one would assume it has to, in order for rebalancing to take place. The problem would come if, I think in the past it swung like a pendulum, perhaps.
Uh-huh.
Historically it was very feminine, and then through various events occurring cosmically, I believe the male consciousness or male divinity aspect became all-powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, or at least, the pendulum swung in that direction. But, yeah, what we need to do is get the pendulum still, almost, so that there's, it's like a good marriage. The husband and wife have equal say.
Mm-hmm.
In what's going on. And certainly the feminine, at least within human society, has been oppressed.
Yes,
and, but, you know, the Hindus have this saying, Shiva is nothing without Shakti, Shakti is nothing without Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can cause grief to ourselves, but eventually there has to be a rebalancing, because spirit needs matter, or soul, as it were. You know, the soul and the spirit are one event, and as much as the spirit has wanted to push the soul down, or even to, you know, the opposite of that is to try to abandon this paradigm altogether, it can't.
Huh.
It's impossible. And so when the reconciliation happens, it happens within all of us, as that I am both, you know, a feminine energy,
mm-hmm.
which is all-encompassing, and a male spirit, which is all-encompassing. And they meet within my being. And I think that if that happens at a greater massive level, then yeah, the Earth will take on a higher vibration without losing her femininity, so to speak.
Uh huh. On many years ago, when I was trying to find some spiritual solutions, and all I got were more questions. It seemed that the only thing of importance was raising consciousness, and I was involved with the Gurdjieff Uspensky School for a little while, and it's about raising consciousness. And maybe you could talk a little bit about what consciousness what it is, and the various I guess you could say, levels of consciousness. In other words, what is there to attain in terms of consciousness that we can access, and how do we do that?
Well, I would say two things are extremely important for me. One is, I'd call it Buddha consciousness.
Okay.
And pardon me. I first had an experience of Buddha consciousness. Well, I call it that, but maybe Buddha would not call it that. But, I mean, I have to humbly admit that these are all my experiences, and I give them names. And, they may only apply to me, but that seems like the appropriate name to me.
Okay.
And it is an all-pervading consciousness, and by that I mean, normally we grow up and we're held in this paradigm, and we have an identity within this paradigm, and we operate within the drama of human society and what we're told is the way things are.
Mm.
But Buddha consciousness pierces through everything. It is an awakening of consciousness that it is the I. You know it when it happens. It is the I you call yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not limited to your body, and it's not limited to this realm. It's an extremely expansive consciousness, which suddenly when it happens, it's almost like your eye is everywhere.
Mm.
And I'm not talking about the physical eye, I'm talking about the,
right.
The letter I, the I we call ourselves. And you suddenly realize, okay, there's this much greater macrocosmic self, is what I would call it, that I am, only somehow I got confused or I hadn't grown yet out of my limited identity. And the limited identity keeps trying to sneak in because that's the one who operates in the drama in this realm. And the greater consciousness, the Buddha consciousness, doesn't have a lot of, you know, things to do here other than be.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all pervasive, it's not really operating in the paradigmatic realm. So in order to access it, well, again, I would say stillness and openness are incredibly important. Because that consciousness, when we arrive at it, we realize that we are expanding through the whole universe. We are intimate at a subtle level with everything, because
yes,
we've expanded
yes.
through it. And so that helps to liberate the individual from a specific identity, which, you know, has its woes and its happinesses and its goals and its trials and drama, and you suddenly become almost an ocean of I-ness, an ocean of, well, Buddha consciousness,
is
what I would call it. And so that's the first extremely important one. The second one, I'm going to be more personal specific because I think, like I said before, I think everyone has their own experiences, and I don't want anything I say to make it sound like I think everybody should have my experience or
right,
my experience
right.
is right. It's what I have experienced, and so, you know, somebody else might have a completely different connection, but my consciousness connections are, in the second phase of this, are to the greater divine beings which exist in the realm to help us. And so, in this sense, we can, if we open ourselves up, we can receive their consciousness, or at least their energy, one or the other, and know that we're not alone here. We're not separate here, and we're being looked out for, and we can get help, and we can also be transformed by those divine consciousnesses. And I would say specifically more for myself, those are, you know, the Hindu deities, but also Christ, absolutely. Kuan Yin is another huge one, and Allah and Sophia from Islam.
Huh,
all of those are available, and Christ is definitely the one who I work with, who I go to. so to speak. But all the rest, I would not, anybody in any religion on earth can work with the divine powers that are presiding over that spirituality. That's why it exists.
It seems strange that there should be so much division between different deities, as you mentioned, that there's so much, I guess you could say it's ego or ignorance or unconsciousness that says that, you know, one deity is right and that's mine and all the rest are wrong, and then those people seem to be spending their lifetimes proving that everybody else is wrong, even if they have to destroy them in the process. That doesn't seem like a very loving way to be.
Yeah, that again, I think, is up to us to bridge the gap, because from my experience, my feeling is that it's up to us to integrate the vibrations and or consciousnesses from the different religions that are that have conflict, because those are subtle vibrations, subtle consciousness. In the sublime realm, there might not be nothing going on that's in conflict.
Right, right.
And when it comes down filtered into us, we grab hold of one, and the rest we don't believe in. But if we are able to, be open enough and integrate, the divine realities or energies or consciousness or beings, whatever you want to call it, from all sorts of different religions and spiritualities, then within ourselves there becomes a harmonic wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
With all those, and then perhaps that can spread. This is partly speculation because it hasn't happened yet.
Well, it does seem that there are a lot of people who consider themselves to be workers in the light or light workers who are attempting to transcend or go beyond the duality that people are falling prey to. And it does seem to be kind of a trap of duality to get stuck in a particular belief or idea. In fact, I wanted to ask you about that. In your book, The Way of Wonder, you spend quite a bit of time talking about unlearning. And I really enjoy that the way that you write about it. Could you share a little bit about that process?
Sure. Yeah, I call it unlearning. I also call it the art of forgetting.
Yes, yeah.
And it's a very subtle kind of, it's very easy but very difficult because it's subtle. And it really has to do with coming back to the experience of mystery and wonder. And unlearning and the art of forgetting are methods to get there. And I'm sure there are other methods. But what we basically have been raised to do in this world is put labels on things so that we can operate within them, and to build up a conventional knowledge within ourselves so we can operate within the paradigm. The problem comes from that. The problem is that limits us. Because where our knowledge ends, our consciousness ends. So we have to figure out a way to get rid of that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And the art of forgetting, which is really, I practice it quite often intentionally. I call it cleaning my RAM space, actually.
I like that.
Yeah, it's basically letting go of everything you've learned, everything you thought the world was, everything that people told you they were, that you were, right down to the bare bones of this moment is now, and I don't know anything about it. It's as if I just sort of manifested into this event.
Yeah, yeah.
Right now, without any prior understanding about what this event is. Because that, by doing that, you cut the slate, you wipe the slate so clean, like it's much more difficult to take each aspect of understanding and say, do I believe that? Do I not? Does it matter? And try and discard that. There's an infinite amount of information we'd have to carve through to get to the point where we realize, no, it's they're all just labels and words, and they're blocking me, and you know, that's important as well. But if you can go right to the source, which is the self in wonder, you know, just by imagining that you were beamed down into this realm from somewhere else, from sleep or whatever. You've never experienced this realm before. You don't know anything that anybody ever told you about it. You've never heard words or labels. You would be in wonder, because you would be like, holy smokes, what is this?
Everything would be mystical and magical. Well, you know, I just had a moment of that a day or two ago when they were showing little babies, close-ups of their eyes, and I was thinking to myself, they're so one-filled with, they look like they're just startled with all the information. They're just like, look at all this. And you know, so you can imagine what a baby looks like. You know, they're just so open and curious. And, you know, I think that's kind of what you're talking about, isn't it? Kind of returning to your essence and just seeing everything without all the filters and beliefs and judgments and so on.
Yep, it's exactly. It's seeing reality as it is, but without trying to paint anything onto it.
Yeah.
We are so conditioned to immediately try and understand. If we allow the mystery to be mystery, which everything is, then it can take on a greater beingness, a greater essence.
Yeah.
And if we try and escape the mystery by putting labels on it, by, you know, having future plans, by, you know, having regrets, fears, anything that is, we call human, which are, you know, wonderful unto themselves because they exist as human qualities, but we don't need them in order to get to wonder. They're a limiting factor.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, you know, just discard all that we have then, all that we thought we were, and be in the profound event, which always is.
Mm-hmm.
Just somehow dodge around it.
You also mentioned, and this is pretty common in many spiritual writings that I've been reading, the difference between the lower self and the higher self. Is it your experience that we're always in touch with our higher self, whether we're aware of it or not? And what is the higher self in your estimation?
Well, there's a number of descriptions or a number of things that I would call the higher self. So I think it's kind of multidimensional.
Okay.
But one aspect of the higher self is that it knows it's divine.
Okay.
And it is our I. It is the I we have, but in order for us to know we are divine, we have to get rid of the idea that we're not divine. But because we're still programmed into this realm of thinking that we're not divine, you know, we kind of have to discard it a lot. So it's higher in the sense that it's a more true understanding of what self is.
Okay.
The self is divine. So if we think we're not divine, then we're somehow being misled by our, you know, by what we've been taught, what we've learned here. But there's another higher self that I've experienced more recently within, you know, the last 3 years after writing that last book, and that I would call a vibrational higher self. And this is more holistic in a sense because it includes the body. And it comes to me sometimes in meditation, but admittedly, like we're talking about before, you have to go places sometimes. When I go to higher vibrational places, and there are a few that I've experienced, I'm sure there are quite a few on Earth. You know, I haven't been everywhere. Then what happens to me when I'm, you know, really open and not necessarily still in the sense of my body being still, but operating ambitionlessly, I jump octaves, is what I would call it. So by that I mean, if you can think of the bodily chakras, the seven main chakras, there are plenty below the feet and some above the head, but the seven bodily chakras, the top one running up to the crown chakra.
Uh-huh.
Now, to leap off octaves means that where your root chakra was, well, in normal existence, the root chakra is right at the base of the spine and the butt.
Uh-huh.
That becomes where the crown chakra was when you jump octaves.
Really?
So now your whole body is one octave higher.
Wow.
And that means your whole being attains a lightness and actually a radiance that is impossible to attain at the lower octave.
Wow.
And it's incredibly... when it first happened to me, it was totally unexpected. I didn't, you know, I had no... It's not something you can have knowledge of, because when it happens, you realize, oh, I've been operating at a lower vibration or a lower octave.
Yeah.
That's not my true essence. It is my true essence in this vibration, but because we have potential to go up to the next octave, we will become different beings.
Uh-huh.
Similar but different, you know, and we will more recognize not only our divine existence, but also that our body is light. And not just light in the sense of the radiance of light, but light in the sense of lightness. It feels light.
Huh.
And the first time I had the experience, I realized that the term enlightenment is not necessarily a consciousness one.
Huh.
When we enlighten, you know how you talk about somebody lightening up. Come
yeah.
on, buddy, lighten up.
Yeah.
So those are all the same thing. It is a bodily lightness, which is also a consciousness lightness, which is also not being dragged down by heavy thoughts. And you experience it at a complete, holistic level. Your eye changes, meaning your inner eye, because suddenly what it thought it was is no longer. It's now a different, because it's attained a different vibrational state.
Wow.
It recognizes itself as a different being.
Wow.
Like similar to, same but different almost. It's very hard to explain. And yeah, it's, I don't really know how to guide others to get there, because it came upon me without my intention. But I think being at high vibrational places in the world and meditating there certainly helps.
Well, just having that visual, for one thing, I mean, just seeing it in my mind's eye, I was like, momentarily I could feel, you know, that my crown chakra was at the base, and it felt right. It was like you were just speaking about something that it was like an aha.
Yeah.
You know, I know I'm not there right now. Obviously, I'm in a dense body, and I'm in a dense mind, and you know, eating dense food and in a dense world, and it's about as dense as it can get. But I have had moments where I felt lighter, and it seems that that would be a natural progression of you know, ascension or being raised up in vibration. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think another image comes to mind, which I realized a couple of years after the first experience, is that I don't know if you've seen these, likely you have if you've seen a lot of religious art, but quite often there are paintings of various Buddhas with other Buddhas sitting on their head.
Yeah.
And then another Buddha sitting on that Buddha.
Yeah.
So sometimes there's like, you know, a pyramid of four Buddhas, and I believe now that's what they're depicting. They're depicting that person has been enlightened, so to speak, in the sense that they have shifted octaves, and the Buddha on top of their head is actually them.
Yeah.
But at a higher octave, and then they keep going up.
Yes, that's amazing. Wow. Wow, that certainly is a quite a thought. That's quite good. And, you know, it's so funny, because I recently saw something on the internet about that showed an elephant painting a picture of itself with a flower in its trunk. And it was just one of those moments when you just realize that, you know, what we conceive of or we picture to be something different or lesser is a consciousness, and it's alive, and it's spirit, and that it's all one fabric. Ultimately, it's all one fabric, and it was a beautiful painting.
Yeah, I've seen that as well on
it's just
from
amazing.
Thailand, I believe.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I was a little bit ashamed that I should be amazed at it. You know, it seems like it would be natural to understand that the animal had a spirit. And of course, over in India, I guess they do have a deeper understanding and respect for animals. Yeah, that's amazing. It was a Buddha on top of that. So each one is a higher octave, and he simply most likely has realized the next octave of realization. I wonder how far it goes.
Well, yeah, who can say?
Well, some say it's like, Mara Baba used to say it was like pearls being strung, and that each one, I guess he was referring to each incarnation, but it could also mean each octave is a pearl, too, that are stringing pearls. And each moment of consciousness is stringing a pearl. So that's I'm really glad you said that. That's a valuable tool. One thing that I wanted to ask you about is there are a lot of questions about good and evil floating around today. And I've been reading some about the astral plane, and that there are one of the reasons why it's so dense here is because there are discarnate souls that have not crossed over that are affecting us from the astral plane. It's become quite a big muck there. What's your perception of, quote, evil, unquote, and how does that play into things? I know that we have to embrace our shadow, but how deep does that go?
Yeah, that's a difficult one, but I'm going to say it as straight as I can because I don't see it any other way. I certainly agree with you that we have to embrace our shadow, and I've written about that we have to unite the polar opposites of good and evil.
Yeah.
Or good and bad is a better way I would describe
right,
it.
So right.
There's definitely work we have to do in owning not only our own negativity, but also in owning that there are ways to perceive the world where the duality of good and bad don't exist. But outside of that, yeah, I have had plenty of experiences with really, really negative energy in the world. Well, in this realm, permeated through this realm. So I have to acknowledge that there are negative, I would call them negative beings or negative consciousnesses, negative powers, which have been either oppressing this realm or utilizing it, raping it.
Yes, yes.
Probably the best word I can use.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've had, even in my early boyhood, some very strong, I would call them negative energy invasions, which lead me to... Yeah, to absolutely state that I do believe it exists. You know,
yeah.
The mind can play all sorts of games with us, so everything has to be taken with a certain gray area. But because I've experienced it at the energetic level, and also recently, within the last 3 years, the energetic level to me is far more... it gives me a far more actual picture of what's going on than... the mind, because the mind can see things in so many different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
It's tough to pinpoint which one is the exact truth, but the energetic body feels, and feeling is so much more true, or it's much more of a litmus paper. And so I've worked a lot over the last 3 years of being able to hold my own space and push out.
Mm.
So that I'm not susceptible to energies that would, you know, prefer to cause me grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know that there are, like I've said before, there are a lot of strong, you know, powers working in our favor, so to speak. So we're not alone in the battle by any means.
But it definitely is a battle, isn't it?
Well, it's...
In a
Something's going on.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I don't know where, what term to give it exactly, but
okay.
I do know that something is going on. That there are negative energies which have negative intent.
Yeah. That certainly seems right to me. I want you to mention your various websites before we run out of time, so that people can go take a look at your incredible artwork. It's so beautiful. It's just, I mean, you can just sit there and stare at it for hours. And you have free downloads as well, don't you, for the screensavers and things?
Yeah, I've got a bunch of, mostly, almost anything I've written or done as art is available online. And really, they only need to go to my website, which is jackhawes.net. Because at the bottom of the main page, there are links to an art site and a site called Spirit and Flesh, which was my attempt to show a deeper integration of what some of what we've talked about, of spirit and matter coming together. Admittedly, I had sort of great expectations about doing much more with on the web, but I've had to pull back. I've really found that electromagnetic radiation is not feeling that good to me right now. So
yeah.
Computer time has really been limited, and I hope that what I've put on the websites is sufficient. And you know, they're not the prettiest websites in the world, but they give everything that I've got to give right now.
Well, your artwork is definitely beautiful. I mean, it's just awesome. I think everybody should just go, you know, check it out. If nothing else, just take a look at some of these incredible pieces. How do you do your artwork? What's the medium?
Yeah, this is another thing. This is most of those.
Oh, I think we're running out of time.
Okay.
Well, we've.
It's been great, Lance. I mean.
Yes, thank you, Jack. It's been wonderful. I appreciate you being on the show, and thank you very much. And like I said, everybody should go check out your website and take a look at your beautiful artwork at jackhawes.net. And we'll have to do this again. We didn't get a chance to talk about Tantra and sex and guilt and all of that, so that could almost be a whole show in itself.
Sure. Yeah, you made it go by like a 10-minute session. So
yeah,
I really appreciate chatting with you. You carry the ball quite well.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Well, I appreciate you being here, and to the listeners and to everybody, thank you, and good night, Jack, and good night to everyone that's listening.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.